Okay, so we were in the middle of the story of Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu. So if you remember, last week we talked a little bit about the structure of the story, and how the story works into Tanakh, right, into its original context. What we'd left off with, using Dr. Yonatan Feintuch's analysis, was the clear switch in the story. Right, so let's just sort of get the basic contours down again. So as it appears in our Gemara, right, what happens? Right, let's see if you remember. If you want to pull out your brachot, you can, but what happens? Chizkiyahu is dying. And the Gemara says, how did it happen that Chizkiyahu was dying?
He's
What,
in
what's the
everyday case.
backstory? No, there's a backstory. Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu were having a standoff. Yeshayahu thought Chizkiyahu should come to visit him. Chizkiyahu thought Yeshayahu could come to visit, right? So God said, what I'll do is I'll make Chizkiyahu sick, and then Yeshayahu will be coming, but it'll be Bikur Cholim, so, the standoff will end. Then what happens? Yeshayahu comes to him and says, you are going to die. He says, why am I going to die? Because you're not having children. But I know that I'm going to have a Rasha, which he is, Menashe. And he says, Bahani kivshei derachmana. So he says, fine, I'm convinced. Give me your daughter as a wife, and I'll have kids, and maybe in that zchut, we will have a righteous kid. And what is Yeshayahu said?
But not with you're gonna have
The
evil kids.
Xer is already done. He says, right, and which Xer? Either he's gonna have a child, but more likely he's gonna die, or maybe both, right? And he says, get out of here, right? I have a Mesorah from my great 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 grandfather, from David, that Adam, even if a sword is on your throat, I'll even know Atzmo min harachamim. You can always daven. Right? And there's this interesting change in the story, which is what we left off with last week, that in the first half of the story, who is the fatalist, right? Chizkiyahu, right? There's, right, my kids are going to be evil, right? And then he's convinced by Yeshayahu that he should move forward. And Yeshayahu says, but you're going to die, right? And he kicks him out and he says, what do you mean? I can always daven to survive, right? And it flips, right? So that we gave one approach to it last week. What I want to do now is Rav Kook, because Rav Kook here has what I think is a brilliant analysis in Enayah. We were talking, Rice Sklar and I were talking about it. This is, Enayah is always wonderful, but sometimes like Rav Kook just hits it, out of the ballpark, and it's just like, okay, like this is like a very, very, very beautiful read of the Agadata. This is one of those just wonderful, I think, Pshatim. I did print it out last week. If you have your sources, great. Otherwise, we'll go through it. I don't want to print it again because Rishmuel David is like, we print too much paper. What? He ill, especially if it's because you lost them in a Hanami. Do you want to quickly just look in the other room on the like the on the table if it's there, right? Because sometimes you guys just leave it and collect it in front of the side of the room. If it's there, great. If not, we'll work through it. I can send it to you. Yeah, because you all can look at your phones anyways, but
that was for you.
What it's on I don't think it was. It's on Wikitext. It's on Wikitext. It's on Wikitext.
Wikitext.
It doesn't help right this second. No? Okay, fine. It is on Wikitext. According to Rice Sklar, I have not gone through it in detail. But apparently there's some typos and whatever. But okay, whatever. So Rav Kook. Okay. So Rav Kook says as follows. It's a bit of a lengthy piece, but I'm gonna read it, okay? So remember, what do we say? Right, while you're looking at it, right? What right, Feintuch's insight already is the fact that the Gemara so obviously flips it. Right, where at least at face value, in the first half of the story, it's Chizkiyahu who's a fatalist, right? And the second is Yeshayahu. It begs you to try to figure out, is there more here? Like, is it just that they switch positions, or is there something deeper that manifests itself in opposite ways, right? Depending on the part of the story, right? And that's really where Rav Kook picks up, right? Rav Kook looked at that same irony, right? That Chizkiyahu is the fatalist in the first half of the story, and Yeshayahu in the second. And says it can't just be that they flip magically. Like, I mean, that what would that mean? But rather, what Chazal are doing are presenting two different views. Now, what he does, and this is a very Rivkook move, but I think this particular case is very compelling. He thinks it's not really, right? Again, I don't find everything Cook says, you know, whatever. I mean, certain things speak to me more, less. This is one of those pieces that a lot of my friends who are, like, big Rivkook guys, when I talk to them about, like, the pieces they're teaching, right, this comes up a lot, right? Because this... So, methodologically, Rivkook does is he looks at this story and he says, it can't just be Chizkiyahu versus Yeshayahu. There's got to be more going on in this story. And what he does is he takes, in formal language, we would say a typological approach. But meaning, the machloket here isn't between Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu. That's not what the Gemara is doing. It's showing the vision of the leadership model of Malchut versus the leadership model of Nevuah. Right? That's what he thinks is going on here. Okay, that this is really, the Gemara is really using Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu to have a conversation about the different models of leadership and what they each mean, right? So you can try to find it on.
So which one's better in the end?
I'll read it to you. So he says like this: Koach haNivuah sheishpiah Hakadosh Baruch Hu liYisrael bizman haNivuah hayta tuudato limalei et atzrachim hanitzchiim shel haUma lanchila chaye ad ruchaniyim. He said, "What was the purpose of Nivuah? Right, to fulfill the spiritual, eternal needs of the Jewish people. Also to teach them the ways of life that would give them, right, eternal existence. And would, right, would make the Spirit of God live, right, forever, and they would merit that the nation should last in the future. Right, so he says, Nevuah represents the leadership that's focused on eternal, right, eternity, because it's the spiritual model of leadership. Right, Malchut, politics, is about leadership that functions in the here and now. That's what Malchut is. Right, a king has to worry about how the nation functions here, now, right now. That's what it is. Right, politics is very, you know, nitty gritty, right, in the moment. Kiyeshnam dvarim. Now you say, is one better than the other, right? He says that's not the point. Kiyeshnam dvarim vanagot mosifin bam omet l'sha'a minotlim imenu koach kiyum olatid. There are some things that give you courage and strength in the present, but are bad and take away your power in the long run. Ulehefech. Dvarim rabim sha'av shemachlishim oto l'sha'a. And then there are things that in the moment make you weaker. Mikol makom osifim heim la'atid ozu gvura. But in the long run, they add power. Vihine. Haniti'a lecharek tzavot. And then he says, right, so you could say, well, is one better than the other? But what if Cook sees in the story is it's not, because, right, this is, remember, in the end of the day, what's the end of the story? They do marry, right? Right, Chizkiyahu does marry the daughter of Yeshayahu. Right, meaning the story doesn't come to a hard right answer. Who's better? And therefore, if Cook sees in this the lesson that vihinein tia lecharek tzavot laolam kashehu mumazeket, as any good Maimonidean knows, right, going to one extreme is always bad and damaging. Shim yasim ha'am daguto rak lekiumo atidi ulamatzavo auvet lo yasim leiv. If someone only worries about the eternal, but not the present, halo az yavodu zarim yagiu v'apilano binoflim, right? Enemies will come, they'll lose. Ad shegam malot ruchov shivatel kiumon eschi yavdu mimenu. And he says, but if you're conquered by enemies, good luck having enriching spiritual lives. Right? You can't just say, I'm just spiritual, right? No one's going, right? We don't need an economy. We don't need an army. We don't need a good luck having, right? Thriving Bate Medrash while, you know, whatever, right? Rockets are falling down on your head and there's no one to protect you, right? That's not going to last, right? It won't last very long. Ulu matze. And on the other hand, ma rabat irech hashchata im yifat leiv ha'am zuma deglo rak chayesha v'chizko hazmani kez bavur dor yisov kochol v'yikashel v'yipol. And he said, on the other hand, what exactly is the point of living a life that only thinks about the here and now, right? What's the point? It's just meaningless. V'nei Hashem Yidbarach Hashomer Yisrael Echin Tamid Sibot Tidiri Ot. So God, now he gets to the story. So how does the story start? There's a standoff between the Navi and the king. So Rav Kook says, you know what that standoff means? There's an inherent tension between the vision of Nevuah and the vision of Malchut, between the leadership model that focuses on the pragmatic in the here and now, and that which focuses on the goals in the long term.
It's interesting that you don't see that come up more often than not, then.
Right. Meaning what the Gemara is doing, right, you have it a little bit with Shmuel and Shaul, right? Both. What? Yeah. And Shmuel is an embodiment of both in many ways, yes.
I was saying in the Starshire, the Hanukkah was talking about, like, the Zadim's main only thing was the here and now. And the
Rav Kook, you were doing this piece in Shabbos. Right. Yeah, right. So for Rav Kook, the point is that there is an inherent tension, right? So now he reads it in. So what is the Gemara telling you? That Yeshayahu, representing Nevuah, was afraid that if you give the upper hand to Malchut, so that people will forget their eternal goals. If the people see Melucha giving to Nevuah, Yasur Chesko HaMedini, Ha'ovemi Menu, Mizet Yitzenet HaZot Ra'ot Matzav Musari Gamke, right? That if they focus too much only on the spiritual and the future, then you collapse in the present, and the end of the day, you can't actually live a spiritual life either. Shel Torah V'Yirat Hashem Midotovot Nitbachot Kulan Boaz Melech. So V'Hakadosh Baruch Hu Itil Pshara B'nehem. So God made a compromise. She'in Hashgachato Tzfuya Shelfim Hatzavam Shishra B'Elehi Hadavam Ruchrach Shiyushnei Ilakachot Shkulim Ufeofen Meduyak. God understood that at that time, especially, there needed to be a synthesis. Dahainu. On the one hand, you needed, on the external, you needed the king to be risen up, right, above Nevuah, so that you could be a strong political nation. But internally, the king has to give in to the right to spiritual life of eternity. So Zoe Psharash HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is the compromise. So now, so far, he's explained, right, the imagery of why is it that the Navi and the king are in, right, tension, that they don't want to see each other, because they represent two models that are inherently in tension. Okay, so you need a compromise. So what's the next step of the Gemara? What's God's compromise? Get one sick. So he says, what does that mean? What is that? What is, why does the compromise make one sick? Says, Hare bigalui haita yad melucha romima. Shere yishayan avi al kol panam malach el chizki ha-melech. Aval p'tocham shel dvarim misavol machov v'nidche ha-melech. So it's a very precise mashal. Because what's the mashal? Remember, when someone mentioned this last week. What's the amazing imagery that the Gemara gives you? That on the externally, who is ascendant? The king. Because the Navi is coming to him. But why is the Navi coming to him? Because he's sick. Which means, the way he reads it is, the external, right, externally, for stability, what needs to have the upper hand? The king. Right? This worldliness. But in truth, who has the upper hand? Right? So, it looks like the Navi is coming to the king, right? But he's coming to the king because there's something missing internally, right? The king is sick, right? So on the externals, right, you need stability, you need politics. But, right, but the Navi is there to deal with the inner problems, right? Lahorot, and this tells you, shelefamim chovah lachni hashkafa zmanit, chotan elumi bin agdala tudah nitzchit. Sometimes, right, this momentness needs to give in to the next worldliness. Lanaga. Kimitsada Hitsoni shall damatavada Hushir Tarahul Mishra Azad Nedar Bekoach. Yimilchasher la Zera in Gura. Al Mitsad Pinini shall Adam, Mitsad Sichloa Yashavish Tudol Haltov Kdusha. Sharich Lanigal in Mamshala shall Makel Noah. Mare Rakada Dera Hatov, Mavaye Lechbo, Lishiti Berelav Yitzratov. And he says the same is true in human beings. Externally, you function on the here and now, right? Practically, pragmatically. But, and sometimes that requires force and strength. But deep down, what's really driving you on the inside, right, is the spirituality. Okay? I'll skip down. So that's this, right? First two steps, three steps. The standoff, compromise, specific compromise of sickness. Okay? So what's the next image that the Rav Kook now needs to deal with? Right? And this is one of those, he has this consistent image that follows through. It's really, again, like, you know, Ray Scar loves Rav Kook a lot and knows Rav Kook much better than I do. But right, this is one of those, like, celebrated pieces that even not, like, super Rav Kook people, like, look at it. It's like, okay, this is, like, systematic. I really understand what's going on here. Right? Okay, so what's his next root move? What's the next negotiation here? Right? He says, you're dying because you didn't have children. And what does he say? So now let's see if you can start to predict it. Let's try to predict what Rav Kook is going to say. What does Chizkiyahu say? Because. Right. So what does he say exactly? So what does he say? He says, I don't want to have a king because my kid's going to be wicked. And Yeshayahu says, but that's not what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to leave it to God. So the way Rav Kook reads it, exactly, he says, Chizkiyahu's a king. He says, listen, I got to worry about, right, nuts and bolts, pragmatism. My son is going to be evil, which means if I have a kid, everything's going to collapse, right? And what does Yeshayahu tell him? B'hadi kiv shedirachman alam alach. We said, but from the vantage point of Nivuah, okay, your father was evil, you're righteous. Your son's going to be evil, meaning, okay, fine, but, right? Yeah, exactly, right? Nivuah is like, listen, I am responsible for the sweep of history, right? So your son's going to be evil, and your father was evil, and you were righteous. I mean, what do you want from my life, right? That's not how you think about things. He says, Greg, what's he saying? He says something like, okay, but if you don't have kids, and there's no heir to the Davidic dynasty, what's worse? Right? As bad as Menashe is, right? So you're going to end the Davidic dynasty, not have any kids, right? Like, you've got to think long term, right? And even the fall of one bad king, right? That's not enough to get rid of the dynasty, the Davidic dynasty, right? You are thinking like a king in the here and now. Okay? Good. Next step. So what does Chizkiyahu do? Chizkiyahu takes it. He accepts it. And what does he say to Yeshayahu?
He says he's
going to
die? No, he says, give me your daughter.
Then. Give me your daughter. Fine, I accept it. Give me your daughter. And maybe between us, we will, right, get out of it. And then he says, I don't want to give you my daughter, you're going to die. And he says, get out of here. So what's the flip? Right? How does it flip? So this is what Rav Kook says. It says, Hagzeira ikar nachata lifi erech shal shalat ha-nitzchiyut. Shatzibot mitachesed le-mesuvavehen lifi malach ha-metziyut. Abol yad Hashem yitbarach ochezed gam ba-malach ha-oveh lavdilo li-tova mi-kishrei ha-sibot ha-kodemet lo-agdo imam ha-charkach. Zui ma-alad ha-tvinah shenikreit chaya isha. So here Rav Kook says something brilliant. He said, this isn't a flip at all. What's happening? Nivuah thinks long term. And therefore, what does Yeshayahu think? Yeshayahu devalues the power of someone on a win, on like on a moment to turn over a new leaf, daven, and overturn the gzera. Why? Right? Because he said God has already decreed that you're going to die because you made a decision, right? And what? You think overnight? Right? In a moment, you can just turn to God, daven, and God is going to say, oh, forget it. Forget my plan. Right? right? Exactly. For years, you've chosen not to get married, not to have kids. You've set a path in motion, right? And you think that now you've changed your mind, right? That's not how Nevuah works, right? Nevuah thinks long term. If God has made his decision that you've already turned away from that path, right? You can't just reverse it because you daven once, you turn to the wall, right? You daven and now you're going to live. I understand, but you understand what Rav Kook is doing. He's saying this isn't, right, local. It's, there are two visions going on here. There's the vision we call Nevuah, which looks at...
And that's why you only didn't like what was happening.
Exactly. Remember, we saw this already last week, that... Remember we saw this last week, that... And this was Feintuch's addition, that to understand this Gemara at some level, you should look at the Yerushalmi and Makot, that... We did this at the end of last week, right? That the Yerushalmi and Makot says, they asked Chachma, what should happen to a Rasha? He should die. They asked Nevuah, what should happen to Rasha? The Navi says, die. And they asked God, what should happen to a Rasha? And God said... Let him do tshuva and he'll live. Meaning, at some level, yes, Nevuah in that Yerushalmi is put up as opposed to God. Right? Meaning, Nevuah is a particular type of relationship. And it's not the one necessarily that's always right. Right? Huh. It's a certain one, right? That what the Yerushalmi is saying, Nevuah is wrong, God is right. Right? Which is a very funny thing to say. But at some level, what it's saying is that the model of Nevuah, right? Yeah, Yonah also gets angry. What? They do tshuva? I mean, look, right? They haven't been, they have, their whole lives they were wicked. Right, and now they do tshuva, and you're going to forgive them. Right, it is the sort of the same thing where Yonah's like, and God says, yes, that is exactly how life works. Right, at some level, Nevuah doesn't think that way. Ki'ilu, right? It thinks.
So then, what's the difference?
What?
What is the difference? What's?
No. So now he says, what's going on here?
Wait, but.
Is that once basically the way what Yeshayahu represents here is the vision. You have to think long term. But once the decision is made, once God has said you've been going the wrong direction for years, right, and now he's going to make you die, right, that means the trajectory is set, right? You shouldn't have made the decision, but, right, you did. Now, what does Chizkiyahu say? And this is what's brilliant, is Rav Kook says, but you don't understand. Being involved in the here and now is not just a political position, umat, a spiritual position. It's also a special, different spiritual orientation, right? Right. The fact that the Melech is animated by the here and now means that his spiritual orientation is also in the here and now. Meaning, he says to Yeshayahu, Shah, right? So God decreed it. But I have a Mesorah from my great-grandfather, meaning from who? From David. Right? Right? Meaning there's a Mesorah amongst kings. Right? This is a kingly way of approaching spirituality. That even if the sword is on your neck, in a moment, God does get involved in the here and now. In the moment. Right? Yes, it's important to think long term, but God also, and he says, Rav Kook has this very clever line. He says, you know how I know? Because what is tefillah called in Chazal? Right? So later on in Bracha, you'll get to the fourth perek. Right, you have this famous debate where one member of Chazal is davening very, very long, right? And what does someone else critique him? And he says, why is he davening so long rather than learning? What's the line? It's a very famous line. Manichin chaye olam v'oskin v'chaye sha'a. He leaves eternal life to deal with temporary life. Because tefillah, right, in the end of the day, is very human, and therefore, it's chaye sha'a. It's, right, life of the moment. Because you're dominating for what I need right now. Right? In the end of the day, tefillah is powerful, but tefillah is the spiritual orientation of someone who lives in the moment. And Torah is the spiritual orientation of someone who's involved in eternity. Right? Because tefillah is, right now I have a headache. God, help me. Right? Torah is, right, think about how the Midrashim describe it. Torah existed 1,000 generations before the world was created. Right? Right? Like, we partake of this eternal idea. But tefillah is me. Little me. I feel sick. I need you. Right? So, what he says is, the reason it's a flip is because it's not a flip. Right? Yeshaya is representing Nevuah, which is, you didn't think about the long term, but now God has decided that he set a new trajectory and there's no turning back. And Chizkiyahu said, listen, I made a mistake, but I can change it. Because that's my spiritual orientation. And all I need to do is daven. Davening is like the mode of the king. Right? That's what he's saying. It's that mentality of Chayeshah. So therefore, he said, Shamar lo b'tor navi, atah gzeira nimshecha mikol nevuah, because Yeshayahu was saying, there's a gzeira, a decree, long term. And he says, kalei nevuah t'chavit say. And what he says is, ha'emeti, a nevuah lefi eirchan itzchiyut levada. He said, nevuah, its strength and weakness, is in that it looks at the long term. But sometimes God cares about the here and now and judges things in the moment. And if I pray and I do tshuva right now, right, God will change it. So then what happens? Right? Then they have a son, right? Right? They have a son. Right, and what is, I'll skip down, but what did Rav Kook, what does Rav Kook obviously think? Why does he think they should have a kid? Why would that help? Right, because what does Rav Kook think? That maybe the solution is the synthesis, right? If somehow we can synthesize, right, the two models, right, that will stop the impending doom, right? And that's the logic, right? It's not just, well, it's not, right, for Rav Kook, it's not just add your schut to my schut. It's, if there's something lacking in my spiritual life, and you represent a different model, maybe that synthesis of the practical, hard-nosed present politics mixed with the ability of the Navi to look long-term, to think about spiritual goals, maybe that's enough to prevent, right, a Menashe. It didn't work, right? And he goes on, but that's fundamentally Rav Kook's idea. And I think it's brilliant because what Rav Kook is doing is he's saying this is a typological read, right? It's the Gemara really having a conversation about the different types of political and spiritual leadership that exist, the inherent tension between them, right? The inherent tension between them, and trying to help you negotiate how these can be, how these can work together at some level, right? That's really what he's getting. And I think, again, what it does very nicely is explain why this is not a flip. It's not really a flip, right? It's that there are really two different worldviews, right? And that's why it's not a flip. It's two perspectives talking over each other, right? That's how he's reading it. Okay, that's Rav Kook. I want to make...
Rabbi, can you read, when Yeshua wanted to kill Hashem, that it wasn't good for them as part of, like, inside this mashal, as, like, they wanted something to get them in the present, but Hashem was not...
Did not think that was right for them?
Well, it could be, right?
Well, originally, he didn't think it was right for them, but, I mean...
Okay. I want to make two more points. Okay, I'm not. This is one of those really celebrate agadot. There really is a lot written on it, but I want to make two more points. I'm gonna need tea before I do mishmar. I'm feeling it right in my throat. It's been a lot of shiurim today. It's been a lot. Shiurim covers this. What? Sure, that'd be great. We'll start with water. I'll make tea afterwards. Okay. So first, I want to. Okay.
No. He's gonna bring him water.
Yeah. Okay. So he says, okay, two points. Two more points I want to make. And again, there's a lot on this story, and I'm not making all the points, but I want to make two. Okay. One is I want to make a point about the Yerushalmi. Okay. Because as we've done many times this year, right, we've looked at the Bavli and the Yerushalmi's version of an Agadata, right? So yet again, we have a parallel story here in the Yerushalmi Sanhedrin. Okay. Now, the context in the Yerushalmi, though, is different. The Yerushalmi is, here, what's the context? Right? What's the whole first parak? What's the first parak talking about? Why does this come up? Tefillah. Right? It's a story about tefillah. What's the relevance at the end of Sanhedrin? Beer, what's the end of Sanhedrin? I know, you're tired. I know. I'm not blaming you, but, yeah.
Ooh, Bishbar. Where is the resolution?
Yeah.
I don't know. Right, what's the end of the, right, Yerushalmi about? There it says, the kings that don't have a chelek in Olam Haba, including Menashe. Right, so this discussion comes part about Menashe. Right, so the Gemara says, v'chimas ha-Menashe. What exactly did he do? What didn't he do? Okay. But in that context, it tells a story. Right? Why are you dying? Because you didn't want me that. Okay, you didn't want to have children. I said, well, why don't you want to have kids? Well, because, you know, I see I'm going to have Menashe. That's a good reason not to have kids, you know? My son is, right? He's like saying, my son's going to be Hitler, right? You want me to have kids? I mean, like, right? Menashe was pretty bad. So, Amarlei, Sav Brati. And now, here's a very interesting difference. Who says to who? Yishayahu says to Chizkiyahu, take my daughter and marry her. Dilma mini uminachi make him barnash tav. Because maybe between us, they'll have a good kid. Afal gav de lokam ella. Nish had de chtev a kalu gelav right. Amr le. Amr le. Lech. Anashma'ini kofetz. Or lama shamr li zkeni. Said, look, I'm going to jump to what my grandfather told me to jump to. My grandfather told me, Shamarli, Imra'ita chalamot kashim, o chizyona kashim, if you see bad dreams or bad visions, kvot l'shosha dvarim, jump to three things, vat nitzol, and you'll be saved. Ve'elu hein, tfila, tztaka, uchuva. Right? If you go to tfila, right, then I'll be saved. U'shlash number pasuk. Gachar, you go to pasuk. Fine. And I'll skip around. Miyad vayasev. So then he turns to the wall. Le'izikir nasa inav. To what wall? Amri Rishon Levi, just like we have in the Bavli. One, he says, Amr Lekira shel Rachav nasa inav. He turned to the wall of Rachav. Right? Because Rachav, remember, in the time of Yeshua, her house was in the wall. Right? Chomai Yoshevet. And he said, Amr Levanav Rabbanah Shalom. He said, God, Rachav shtei nefashot hitzilalach. Rachav saved two lives. And yet you saved her whole family. Right? So I saved a lot of people. Right? Chizkiyahu saved a lot of people. Fine. Rushim ben Yochai said, Afilo hayim mishpachotel matayim en Hashem, blah, 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 even 205. I'll skip that. Rushim bar Nachman or Nazin of Akira shel Shunamit. He looked at the Isha Shunamit from Elisha. Remember Elisha? Right? Elisha, there was an Isha Shunamit who took in, right? Elisha and gave him a little wall, a little attic, and she brought, and in that schod, when his son died, right, he brought his son back to life, or her son back to life, Yonah. Right? Which, according to the Midrash, is Yonah, yes. According to the Midrash, is Yonah. Please know the difference. Yes. If you need, you can do what some of the schools in Gush do, is when they learn Midrash, they have to put on a separate hat so that they know, this is Pshat, this is Midrash.
Wait, actually? Okay.
Yes.
Wait, can we do that?
What? So that they learn Midrash, but they know the difference. You can be aware.
No, I'm serious. We think we should do that here.
I don't think we should.
No, because we need a visual
act. Amarlei. Okay. Reb Chanina bar Papa bar Natan Eina Bekira Beit HaMikdash. Reb Chanina bar Papa said he looked at the walls of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? And he said, right, there were people who couldn't go to the Beit HaMikdash, they davened at home, and I brought, right, I basically brought people back to the Beit HaMikdash, right? My ancestors built the Beit HaMikdash, right? And then the last shita is Natan Einav Bekirot Libo. He looked at the walls of his heart, right? And he said, right, I've looked at my 248 limbs and I've never done anything wrong, right, to you. Okay. Fine. So this is the Yerushalmi story. So, again, there are many differences, but let's pick up a few, okay? So first of all, the story... There, right, what is it cut out? Right, what is the story cut out? The standoff. Right, there's no standoff, right? There's no standoff in Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu. Right, second of all, in the Bavli, who suggests that Yeshayahu's daughter marry Chizkiyahu? Chizkiyahu. Who does in the Yerushalmi? Good. What is important about those 2 points that I just mentioned? Come on, what's important about that fact? I know you're tired. I know. That's why I'm trying to get you engaged, right? What's important about the fact there's no standoff and that it's Yishayahu and not Chizkiyahu who offers his daughter in marriage?
And when Chizkiyahu's looking at the future and when Yishayahu
is. More importantly, Yerushalmi doesn't see a conflict. Right, think about it.
There's no conflict, right?
There's no standoff and Yishayahu comes to tell Chizkiyahu you're dying. And then when he's dying, what does Yishayahu do? Yeah, he says, together, let's try to save you. Right? There's no conflict. Right? Exactly. Right? There's no conflict. Now, why is it? Right? Right? Why is it that this is the case? Right? We can only speculate. Right? We can only speculate. Right?
With Dalit, like, being outside
now, it could be, right? It could be that the difference is that, yeah, right? It could be, and this we've seen this before, right? You the Yerushalmi, which takes place in Eretz Yisrael, right? And more of a lived tradition, right? Sort of, Malchut is a, right, more of a reality, right? Or you might think of it more a reality, so maybe you think in more synthetic terms, not fake terms, but synthesized terms, right? As opposed to in Babel, where it's like theoretical, right? Like, the power is not Jewish, and the rabbis, right? There is that sort of, in their lived experience, a split, right, between political power and religious power, right? There is, so it could be that in Eretz Yisrael, if not the way they're thinking, right, it's more synthesized, right? Right, who knows, right? It could be that the, or it could be that it's about the role the story's playing. Then the in the Bavli, what's the role of the story? Tefillah, right? And therefore, right, this, right, the drama, leave, you don't understand the power of tefillah, right? At some level, that conflict sets up the power of tefillah, where in the Yerushalmi, why is the story brought up? Right, about Menashe, right? And the key here is more to say that they tried to not have Menashe, they tried to do everything they could, it didn't work, right? So it could be about the different focus, very foci of what the story is trying to tell, right? So you can talk about different things, but it's important to notice the difference. Now, the next thing that's really important here is about the number of walls, right? In the Bavli, there are only two deot, right? Reish Lakish, who says he's turning to the walls of his heart, right? And Rabbi Levi, I think it's only two, right? Right, in the Shunamit. Right, but Yerushalmi has, right, multiple views, right? Also has Rachav HaZonah, right? Sorry, or is the right? And the Shunamit and the Beit HaMikdash and his hearts, right? So you have the last Shita, right? Which seems to overlap, right? The walls of his heart, but they're not identical. In the Yerushalmi, how do I put this? I'll read you Feintuch's comments on this, okay? In the Yerushalmi too, the different opinions illuminate different aspects of prayer. The final opinion, that of the sages, seems to parallel that of Reish Lakish of the Bavli. But if we look closely, we see that they're not identical. The opinion of the sage in the Yerushalmi is formulated in accordance with the uniform model for all the various opinions here. He lifted, set his eyes upon. The model comes in response to the question that prompted the answers. To which wall did he lift his eyes? The question established in advance, the various answers were offered insights leading to the conclusion that Chizkiyahu is worthy of salvation and recovery. Thus, in the first two teachings, Chizkiyahu looks to Rachav and the Shunammite women, whose deeds render their descendants deserving of salvation. He argues that he must be even more worthy of being saved, considering the greater deeds of his grandfather, right, etc. In the third teaching, Chizkiyahu compares to that of his forefathers. In the fourth, Chizkiyahu offers no comparison at all. He looks to his deeds and concludes that he's worthy of saving. Thus, the Yerushalmi presents a gradual progression from the outside inward, from two different foreign unrelated women, to his forefathers, meaning the Beit HaMikdash, right, to himself, right? Right, so what it's doing is, right, it's talking about walls moving geographically and historically, right, into himself. In the Bavli, the question is more general. Which wall? What walls are referred to? This allows for a different formulation of the answers. This is Reish Lakish. He prayed from the inner chambers of his heart. Right? As it's written, right? My bowels, I'm shaking the chambers of my heart. The explanation is not to turn our attention to something that could serve as a basis for argument of Chizkiyahu's merit. Right? And again, what's the difference? In the Bavli, it's about tefillah.
Yeah.
So what's Reish Lakish's answer doing? There's two answers. Right? One is he was looking at some external explanation, and the final answer of Reish Lakish is, right, it's like the one that it leaves you off on, is where does tefillah come from? From your heart. But in the Yerushalmi, what's the point of looking at the kir? What's the drama of the story?
To
explain Menashe's story. And what is it saying? These were four types of zechuyot that Chizkiyahu tried to invoke to save Menashe. Right? It's a different focus. Right? And that's what Feintuch notes here, that in the Bavli, right, the context of the story is the time for reciting Shema, right? And in that sense, the story of Chizkiyahu is really broad, right? Because of the importance of tefillah, of that final line, afilu cherev chad amunach tzarah shel adam, right? And it connects to sort of earlier discussions about David's tefillot, and we can go through, you know, sort of several daf there. And again, that's not the case in the Yerushalmi, where it's really a story about Menashe. Okay? So that's a little bit on the comparison to Bavli Yerushalmi. Part of me wants to do it for a third week, but I know that that's a bad idea to keep on the same story for the third week, as much as there is in the story, and also Hanukkah's next week. So that would mean being on the story for a month. So I'm like opting against it. So in 5 minutes, I want to throw out, which is the longest part of this Gemara in modern times, is the following. This Gemara becomes very important halacha l'maisa. Very important halacha l'maisa. You already see hints of this in the Rishonim. But in the Achronim, it really explodes. Because in a nutshell, in the last, let's say, 50 years, and even more so in the last 5 years, right? What's been happening is that human beings have learned to take control of the reproductive process.
Oh,
right? Right? IVF, right? IUI, all types of, right? ART. Yeah. Right, artificial reproductive technologies. Exactly. And there's this major halachic / hashkafic machloket that's exploded in the last few years of exactly what Ezra calls it, the playing God machloket. Right? And it has different manifestations. Should I, right, an early version of this was, should I be allowed to choose the sex of my child? Right? Right? But, you know, but now, since CRISPR, right, you know what CRISPR is?
Nope.
So CRISPR is the, you know, the up and coming new technology of genetic modification where it's become cheap and easy. Which cheap and easy. Exactly. Right. And basically we're not that far off, and we're basically right at the point where we can rewrite genes.
Right.
And right, we're using it for medical things. Right. The focus obviously first and foremost is medical issues, right? Where like you can do like gene therapy possibly in utero and make sure that someone doesn't have a gene for whatever disease. But right, in the not too distant future, and in certain countries that are already working towards this, ethical or not, right, to create designer babies, right? That's the future, and the and this
blonde hair, blue eyes,
and this Gemara has really become in this like quasi halachic, quasi hashkafic machloket, has become one of the cornerstones, right? Because many of the people who think we shouldn't be involved, and again, this is a huge discussion, and there are so many tshuvot on this topic, right? What do they say? They say we actually have a precedent. Because Chizkiyahu knew that his son would be evil, right? If ever there was a time you wanted to control, right, what the next generation would look like, it was Chizkiyahu who knew that his son would be Menashe. And what did Yeshayahu say to him? Bahani kivshei derachman alamalach. It's not your problem. That's God's problem, right? So people like Rav Neuwirth, right, who wrote Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, you know Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa? Hold on 1 second. Okay, fine, but that's our standard psak.
Okay,
so one second. So there are a group of poskim over the in different ways, and Rav Neuwirth is a very simple one. Rav Neuwirth, when asked, can you choose the sex of your child, right? Right, can you do that, right? You're doing IVF anyways, right? Can you choose the sex of your child? He said, basically, in one line, he's like, it pains me you're even asking this question. Right? What?
Is it your
one? Sick. Okay.
Stop.
Really, stop. And he says, Bahani kivshei derachman alamalach. Right? He says, right, and he has consistently this halachic hashkafic position, which is, your job is to have children, and that's it. Right? Beyond that, right, yes, you're not mekayim peruvu unless you have a boy and a girl, but that's not your business. Your business is to have children. What happens? Bahani kivshei derachman alamalach. Right? And that is one group of poskim who, again, is it a halachic position, a hashkafic position? It's very hard to tell the difference between them, I'll be honest, in this area, right? Now, some will say, I oppose it for cosmetic reasons, but I'm okay with it if it's going to prevent a kid from having K-sex, right?
What's a
meaning, when they say you can't do it because v'hanei kivshid rachman alam alach, is that a halachic psak? Is it saying that this is wrong philosophically? Right? It's very hard to tell what they're saying, right? When he writes a one-liner, it's very hard to tell. Is he posk? I mean, he is a posik, and he's opposed to it. Does that mean it's a psak? I don't know what to tell you, okay? I don't know what to tell you. Now, there are people in the middle who will say, listen, you shouldn't have designer babies, but to prevent your kid from having a terrible illness, right? And then there are people on the other hand who say, listen, this is an agarata. We don't posk in from agarata. It's a local thing in it. And we have many other Gemara that talk about how we are supposed to control nature, right? There are specific halachic Gemara that say, Inida, if you want to have a boy, right, then this is how you should have sex, right? I mean, there's an actual Gemara, right? Like, right, Yavavisha, which means that the Gemara does say that you can apparently do certain things to at least increase your chances, right? So you might say, well, there's a difference between...
Yeah. Okay.
No, no. So of course, people will respond and saying, no, there's a difference between saying... Look, I can try to do whatever I do, but in the end of the day, it's up to God, rather than IVF. I'm controlling it. Like I said, I don't want to get into the full thing because I don't have any time, right? But what I want you to understand is that the tension in this Gemara, right? Now that deciding what your children will be, the sex of your child, the health of your child, the eye color, the height, right? You know, I mean, genetically, like my, you know, like it's like we go to the doctor, they're like, your kids are at the bottom of the height charts. And I'm like, well, I'm 5'1", my wife is 5'2". What exactly do you expect? Right? I'm saying like, right? So sure, right? There's a difference between saying, well, I want my kids to break out of their genetic, you know, trajectory and be 6'7". I mean, fine. And like saying, whatever, I don't want my kid to have this, right? But the fact that there was a Gemara, where already they're arguing over Peruvu, right? And there was a problem, gives people the language. Now again, you'll have people like, Rav Neuwirth will say, aha, this is a model. If even to prevent Menashe, right, you can't do it, so that means that, what? No, it was he refused to have children.
No, but the story is talking about tefillah.
So. No, in a harami. No. But my point is that you could look at this story, and Rav Neuwirth does, and says, the message you're supposed to take from the story is that when it comes to having kids, your job is to have kids, right? And what happens is God's department. And there are other people who say, no, it's an agadata, and it's really about tefillah, and this is, right, a very specific case where it's a navi, and da-da-da-da-da. But this is all within all the realm of science, and anything that can be done naturally, right, so, that's not kivshei derachmana, right? The fact that it's scientific shows it's not kivshei derachmana, it's us, right? Again, like I said, look, if you guys override me and say, despite the fact that it would be a third week, over 4 weeks because of Hanukkah break, right, that you want to spend an hour on the halachic implications of spelling it out, I'm open to doing that. I'm not opposed, right? I'm looking at my makarot now. One second, let me look at my personal makarot. Okay, one second. I'm just going to look at my personal makarot. So according to my makarot pick up, I have... starting where I wrote in my notes halachic issues, I have another 51 pages of makarot. And that was just what I included here, not things I'd given Shiran on the past, which are elsewhere on my computer, just what I put for this. So like I said, I have no, it's not like I have a problem, but some of it's written. Okay, maybe like 30, 35 pages. Whatever, it's not like I have a problem giving another hour on this. I don't care. All I want you to understand is that this is, as you can tell, besides the local issues, the fact that this Gemara is about procreation and knowing that your child is going to be really problematic, and that's where the Gemara chooses to have this very suggestive line, Bahani Kivshei Rachmana Lamalach, you can understand why this is least is going to be brought in. I'm not saying it's compelling. I'm saying that major poskim think it is, right? Right? Major poskim. Rav Neuwirth is a very serious posik, right? I mean, he wrote Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, right? He's not someone you can say, but. I mean, you can. You can say, I don't agree, right? But this is not someone who, like, you can say, right?
Would you say there's a difference between Rosh Hashanah for them?
There are all types of distinctions we can have. What I just said is I'm not doing that. I'm throwing out the beginning of a conversation, right? Now, I will throw out, this is a conversation not just about Purvu. It comes up in choosing the sex of your child. It comes up in CRISPR. But similar things are brought up in cloning, in GMOs, right? This whole machloket about playing God is a much broader. I want to give a series called Playing God in Halacha, which is just about all the issues that, in one way or another, poskim say this is a meta-halachic kashkafic issue, right? And there are a lot of them, right? Even just in the procreative ones, there are a lot of them. Even just in choosing the sex of your child, there are a lot of them, right? If you just read the tshuva, that was the collection of tshuva put together by Menachem Pua in their book, right, on it, where they wrote up an article and then asked a bunch of gedolim and got their responses, right? But here I have a bunch of tshuvot on poskim, not just in choosing the sex of the child, but medical issues, that are, right? Meaning these things come up a lot. And as we gain more control over the world and over procreative, right, technologies, and the things we can do is crazy. Okay, you don't, if you don't know what CRISPR is, right, look up CRISPR, and then you'll understand how insane it is what it's we can fun. Do and how easy it is. Right? CRISPR. It's gene editing. That's exactly what it is. And as we gain control of the world, right, this is one of the Gemaras that is brought into, you know, I had a very fun conversation about this at some point with my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law is finishing her PhD in genetics. CRISPR stands for clustered, regularly interspaced, short, palindromic repeats. Okay?
Yes.
CRISPR for short, yes. Really, you don't think every time I talk about it, I should say, this is relevant in the sugya of clustered, regularly interspaced, short, palindromic repeats. Yeah. Right? God Almighty. But just to understand, the fact that this Agadita exists, right, is important. And seeing its potential in halacha, and the fact that halacha, that Agadita hashkafa can overflow into practical psak, call it halacha, call it practical hashkafa, call it what you want, right, is really important, right?
Are you allowed to use Agadita for
halacha? That is a major question in halacha, which we're not going to do today. Maybe we'll do it at some point as a standalone share this year. No, I understand. It's a very important topic in general. We'll see. Maybe we'll do it this year. I'm not opposed to doing it. Okay, let's stop there because we have to do Marav and have to do Mishmar. You can do Marav now. That was what Regensburg decided. So guys, what I'll just leave you with is this, okay? Again, my hesitation with doing another week on this Agadita is simply that, A, I could go on forever about this Agadita, which I don't want to do. We have to cover some ground. B is simply that not only do I not like spending 3 weeks on the same Agadita, with Hanukkah, it means we're spending a month, right? And you're going to forget this in 2 weeks from now, right? So I really just feel like as much as the halachic implications are fascinating and really, really important, I mean, they really are, right? They really, really are important. I'm not saying they're not. These are major ones, and I gave more than one series. I gave one series at a conservative shul in Toronto, and then I gave a more intense version at Shomrei Shabbos. You can imagine the difference. I gave like an overview at, I said that more for Shlomo, that Shlomo understood the difference in the chevra who are coming to my advanced halacha Iyun shir at Shomrei Shabbos. It was a very intense shir. So I gave a version of it at Beth Emeth, which was very substantive, but you know, a little bit more basic. And then a version at Shomrei Shabbos, which was a very serious chevra there. I mean, it was like, it's like, yeah, it's like
conservative Jewry. Okay.
What? Yeah. And then Shomrei Shabbos is like, I don't know how to explain Shomrei Shabbos. It's like a more open-minded yeshiva shul, but like super serious, like very serious. Talmud Chacham is the rabbi. Like I Felder, like that is like, so I gave it to Beth Emeth and I gave it to Shomrei Shabbos. So I've given this, I've dealt with this topic many times. And it's a very, very, very important topic. No, Shomrei Shabbos is like yeshivish, but open yeshivish. No, it's like open yeshivish. It's like, right, it's like, it is like a yeshiva shul, but like they say the Mishaberach for Tzahal, but not the Medina, every Monday and Thursday. It's a very interesting like combination, very interesting place. So, guys, think about it. If you guys are really, really committed to, guys, if you're really committed to doing the halacha shir, think about it. I do think there's a big cost to not moving on and to holding this off for 2 weeks. It could be that maybe some point in the year we'll find a different slot to do it and do it extensively, but okay.